All right, we are back live here. It is Tuesday, June 9th. Hope everybody's doing well. I'm Mike Jeffers, Chicago Jazz Magazine, ChicagoJazz.com. And of course, you are watching Chicago Music Revealed. Whew, we just had a false alarm. So for those of you that saw the false alarm, I apologize. I don't know what happened. The whole system froze up, shut down right at the last second. But we are back. We are live here. We are doing the early show today. It is 5:45. So I'm only 15 minutes late compared to what I said I was going to be at 5:30. But it's music. And we all improvise. And that's what we're doing here. Anyways, before I get into the whole thing, thank you for joining us. Of course, all the past issues, all the past episodes are at ChicagoMusicRevealed.com. I'm Mike Jeffers, as I said before. I'm also the Director of Programming and Entertainment at the soon-to-be-opening Epiphany Center for the Arts. Get all the information at EpiphanyShy.com. Now, I don't want to delay anymore because I have two separate sets of guests. My first guests, Michelle and Darren, they're going to join us. I'm going to bring them on now. They are doing an incredibly exciting live stream tonight of a show that they had live at Winters, actually when there were audiences allowed to see live performances back, oh, so many months ago, isn't it, guys? Isn't that right, guys? How are you?
We're good.
Doing great.
How are you doing?
Well, I'm doing much better now that my system's working and I can see and hear you both. So that's
nice.
I'm ahead of the game so far here today. Yeah. Fingers are crossed. But you guys have a great live stream now. I know before we get into the live stream that you're going to be doing tonight, which is your Lambert, Hendrix, and Ross show that you did at Winters. It was about a year ago, I think you said. So this is the live stream, and you've got some special guests that you're going to be doing and all that. But before we even get into that, I want to make sure that we plug, you guys also do some interesting live streaming on your own, on your channels. So I would suggest everyone checking out, where can everybody see the show tonight, and where can everybody see your other live stream events? Where should we send everybody? Over to Michelle's page?
Sure. Yeah. So this will be a Facebook live event at MichelleThomasMusic.com. So if you join my page, like my page, you'll get alerts when we are putting on live stream shows. And well,
that was basically MichelleThomasMusic.com.
Yes.
And that's also the Facebook. Well, you can go by Michelle Thomas or Michelle Thomas Music.
Yes.
On Facebook, if you're trying to get dialed in for tonight. So.
Yeah.
Well, we'll link it. We'll link it all up and
link
everything.
It in. Good.
And but this is the first time you guys.
Pro, Mike. I know.
But this is the first time you guys are doing something like this, because this is a actual past performance that you guys recorded when you performed it live at Winters, one of our favorite clubs, obviously. And this was back about a year ago. And talk a little bit about the show. Actually, Michelle, didn't I have you on my Talkin' Jazz show? I think we were promoting it back when you were, you and Jeff, I think we had on.
Yeah.
That's right. And we were actually at Johnny O's, the good old days when all of us could get together and actually be in the same spot during performance. But talk a little bit about the performance. Now, Lambert, Hendrix, and Ross, I'm saying it slow so I don't screw it up. I mean, that's a world famous, legendary trio, and you guys put something on very special. Talk a little bit about the performance.
Yes, no, absolutely. This was actually the second show we had done with a theme more geared towards Lambert, Hendrix, and Ross, the group. We had done a show prior to that the year before, too long after John Hendrix had actually passed away. And I wanted to put together a show dedicating it to the music of John Hendrix with all the lyrics that he had written for so many jazz greats. And so Jeff Hedberg and Alyssa Allgood came together, and we basically presented a lot of the solo work. And then we did a couple of tunes from Lambert, Hendrix, and Ross, because as you know, they're a really iconic group, but it's super challenging material. They were the first to kind of like be the springboard of what whoever was coming after that in terms of vocal groups, the Manhattan Transfer, Take Six. And they were doing music of big bands, of quartets, and doing these really complex, tight harmonies. So the next year, Scott Stegman from Winters asked us to come back and actually do a show of Lambert, Hendrix, and Ross exclusively. And we took the challenge. and and did our best to recreate much of their material with the three of us who have never sung in vocal groups before. I should say never, but we've not come together as a jazz vocal group, right. So I just want to make a note of that.
Well, and I can remember when I had you and Jeff on the show, and you guys were talking about that and how challenging the music was to put together. And I think, I don't know, you probably knew, but I think Jeff was a little stunned at how challenging it was. And then piecing it all together and putting this show together, it was quite an undertaking, right?
Yeah, because much of that music, I mean, I would say maybe a portion of the things that Lambert, Hendrix, and Ross has been transcribed, but really not the majority of their body of work. So we were spending a lot of time transcribing harmonies, listening a lot to their past recordings and really piecing together the best we could, like this is what they laid out in terms of harmonies for these songs.
Relying on your chart writer a whole lot, just to help out.
I wonder who the chart writer was. Is the chart writer around that we could talk
no,
to?
No, you know what? Yeah, no. Well, we were going to have him over, but we're still, it's not quite yet. I know it's stage three, but we're, stage four is for chart writers.
Yeah, phase four. Phase three, you can have outdoor patio seating. Phase four, chart writers can be in the same room as the Italians. Right. Is that how it works?
So get ready. Stage five, Rangers. You might actually start working again.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Hey, so talk a little bit about the challenge of that, though. I mean, putting together these charts, you're transcribing that because a lot of this stuff is not readily available, right? I mean, to talk about the chart writing, I mean, a lot of this stuff is not readily available. And for those of you that are casual music fans and you're watching this, you're like, well, what's a chart writer anyways? What's he doing? Well, he's kind of important because he's laying out all of the music so that the entire band can see what they're supposed to be playing.
Right.
And also working through the chord changes. I mean, how difficult was that? Because, you can't just walk up to, well, I don't know, you walk up anywhere and buy music anymore. You can't go online really and download charts for this kind of music.
No. And so much, I think, of just jazz genres, like you'll find that it's been recorded, these things have been recorded, but not made into like published music per se. So
or if it is, it's someone who's, I mean, they're watering it down for a publication for a school or they're expanding it for a vocal jazz group, but actually finding actual, there isn't an omnibook Lambert, Hendrix, and Ross. So yeah,
that's aligned to the actual arrangements of those original recordings. So that was the other part too. We wanted to stay true to those, like as close as we could to the original arrangements. And so just with the help of everybody in the pool, really, Alyssa, Jeff, Darren, all of us were in terms of trying to piece this together and putting together music for vocalists to be able to see, here's our parts, here's what we're singing, here's the form and arrangement of this particular track that they did.
Talk a little bit, Darren, talk a little bit about playing, because you're also the drummer outside of the chart writer.
Right.
Talk a little bit about just putting the band together for this, because, we're both drummers. I mean, it's not like you and I sit around and play a lot of this kind. I mean, some of these tunes, yes, but some of them, no. I mean, what was it to put the rhythm section together to make it that cohesive while all this other stuff is happening above it?
Well, I think the key was to finding team players is overused, but I guess not so much in the sense of, they have to lay back and kind of, but like we were rehearsing this stuff very quickly. So if all of a sudden there was a hole that we couldn't fill, it was like, you want to take this bass solo? And it was no, I mean, when you say that to a bassist, they're not going to say no generally, but it was like, and fill this spot. And the first show we did, Clark Summers was playing bass, who obviously, was part of the, a team player, the ultimate team player. Yeah. And we had Kevin Fort on piano, and mm-hmm. Kevin pretty knocked it out. I sent him the recordings.
Yeah.
And anything that I didn't, and I was writing out charts, I'm the chart writer and some arranging. We all did some arranging on it too.
Yeah.
I pretty much said, this is what I got. His are a lot better than mine. I might be able to outline of a chord, sent it to him. He listened to the recordings, and then he sent back the, what was good. He put a little gold star, and what was bad, he sent it to me. And then in the second concert, we were joined with Corey Biggerstaff on bass. Yeah. And we play together all the time, playing with Jeannie Tanner and a whole bunch, and sometimes with Michelle. And, yeah. And we were in the car, and I was like, you know anything about that stuff? I was giving him the gig before, and he was like, oh, yeah, man, I used to listen to that stuff all the time. That's how I learned to play bass. I was like, oh, okay, that's weird. So fortuitous. Yeah. And, yeah, so we... that's how it all kind of came together.
And really to that end, too, I guess I didn't even mention how Alyssa and Jeff came onto it. I'll be honest with you. I probably was just following intuition. I had just been maybe talking to them around that time, and I just had a feeling. I was like, who do I think will possibly nerd out on this music? Who do I think if I call them and they're just like, yeah, I have not done this before, but I'm all in. I will jump all in. And I called both of them, and that's exactly what they did. They were just like, absolutely, count me in.
Well, that comes back to a question that I'm curious, Michelle, that you can answer. And I'm sure this pertains to Alyssa and Jeff too, but since they're not here to ask them, I'm asking you. But what did you learn when you were, learning this music? What jumped out at you that maybe now you use it in your repertoire when you're performing? Because, when you start transcribing and really getting inside of, regardless of who the artist is, you always find little nuances and find little things that help you. And especially as a vocalist, you probably found some things in this music that you might have heard it a million times, but you never caught that because you were studying it so closely. Anything jump out?
Oh, wow. No, that's a really good question. I the first thing that kind of comes to mind is just an idea of just how to work with vocalese, like listening to instrumental pieces with new ears. Mm. And that was one of the things that I so appreciated about John Hendricks, because if you can just imagine, just like taking an instrumental piece, and this is not, you're not writing words first, you're listening to what a composed through piece, you're listening to an improvised solo that was spontaneous, and you're literally taking every note of that and making a decision about, I'm not only am I going to write just some lyrics with John Hendricks, so expert, he's going to write like a stream of consciousness, like through, it's going to make sense through this thing that's there. So there was just so much to see about that, just the genius of that, and learning lyrics to these pieces, but also having an opportunity to just really digest Miles Davis, Count Basie, digest them in a whole new way with this like thought pattern, not only of just phrasing and lines and everything, but it's just like, why did John pick that lyric to go with that particular phrase? Like, why did that work? How is like that got expressed a certain way? So I just think I can speak for myself, but I think for all of us, it really informs you more as a jazz vocalist. You get deeper into so much more layers of the music in terms of how you're expressing yourself.
Have you ever done vocalese yourself? I mean, do you do that on some tunes? I mean, cause he's improvising lyrics, and he's like, I mean, it's like, essentially, so the people that are watching this that don't understand, and I don't know why a drummer is about to explain this, I should just have Michelle explain it. But I'm going to try, and then you can fix it. But essentially vocalese, I mean, you're essentially, let's call it, taking a sax solo, but you're vocalizing it, and you're putting lyrics, instead of just scatting, you're actually creating a story by saying lyrics to it, so it flows through. I mean, and John Hendricks specifically has influenced so many different vocalists. One of them, Kurt Elling, with this style of music and with this style of vocalese. So have you done this in the past? I mean, because it's incredibly difficult, I would imagine.
Yeah. I definitely have practiced it and brought it into pieces that I've done. I can't say that I've gone as far as to transcribe and write lyrics over an improvised solo as of yet, though I'm still working at it. but definitely, I mean, there's a tradition and vocal jazz of writing lyrics to the heads of tunes. And I've definitely participated in that. Both I and Alyssa have done that, written our own original lyrics to the heads of tunes that we have been inspired by. And that in and of itself is difficult. It's still difficult.
And you've done that to like two or three Wayne Shorter tunes, right?
I've done that to a few Wayne Shorter tunes, to a Hal Galper tune.
That's great.
I'm trying to think of what might be coming up on the next album too. But right. But yeah, I continue to practice it. It's a very special and specific type of songwriting and lyric writing that goes with that is really not taught anywhere, and the last person to teach it was John Hendricks at the University of Toledo. Yeah. So right. I hope that someone like gets into that, like that type of songwriting again.
Well, it's really difficult. I couldn't even imagine how you'd even approach teaching it, like in an educational standpoint. You know, I mean,
right.
I can see maybe one-on-one if you've got a private student and you guys are working on something and you're making suggestions, but to be able to bring that into a curriculum like at a jazz studies level, I don't even know how you would do that because everybody's so different, you know.
Yeah.
You know, so all right, so
I sat in on one of those John Hendricks classes, honestly.
You know, one thing that was interesting about that, though, you were talking about the group of the instrumentalists. The other thing about the vocalists that I noticed as a, you know, drummer and instrumentalist is what was interesting is Alyssa, Michelle, and especially Jeff were able to make to kind of come together and not sound like, and this is no slam in a New York Voices kinds of thing, or what's the other, Manhattan Transfer. That, I mean, again, this is their thing, is high powered, you know, like, you know, voices of the angels kind of thing. They're always kind of sing it, but Michelle, Alyssa, and Jeff brought that a little bit more into the kind of horn style phrasing, or it doesn't always have to be. And Jeff, being also a fine trumpet player, I was noticing him a lot of times shaping a phrase that didn't sound like a singer was shaping a phrase, but how he would be playing if he was playing second, or if he's having a good day, first chair, and you know, in a big band. Yeah. You know, so it was interesting to hear how that kind of shaped that.
Yeah.
And then after I was hearing your scatting, you know, after she had been kind of, she went to the, well, she didn't go to the physical school of John Hendricks, but she definitely went to the musical one, right?
Yes, yes.
I started hearing your scatting change quite a bit.
Yeah,
you know, and it just did. It was a little more paced. It's not kind of like you're revving up while the guitar player is doing his solo. You just have a lot more pacing and a lot more depth to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and that's that to me would be the natural progression, right? Because when you, it's like transcribing a solo, you hear the space, or you hear the different phrasing differently when you're really getting into it rather than just listening to it in the car. So, I mean, to get into that depth, and it's surprising how much depth there is, because he used to make it sound so simple. Like, it was like, yeah, no problem. You know, I mean, it's like,
you're
listening to like Ella Fitzgerald's scat. It's like, oh yeah, no problem. What's the big deal? Hey, what's the problem?
I could probably do that.
But that was the beauty of that group, is they made everything sound so simple, but it was so complex. So it could connect with that audience. So we should tell everybody they need to head over to facebook.com/MichelleThomasMusic at 7:30 tonight and talk a little bit about the format. Now, you guys are going to be doing an interview back and forth with Alyssa and Jeff while playing some of the tunes back and forth, right? So this is going to be kind of an exciting show. Hopefully your technology is a little better than mine. That's the thought process, hopefully.
Yeah, we're trying to pull together quite a few. We're gonna try to eclipse you actually tonight. So what we're doing is we're playing the show. We're also gonna bring Alyssa and Jeff in for some interview stuff and just talking about that show. Current events. All these different kinds of things. What we were doing through the shutdown. So I'm stealing a little bit of your thunder. But we are also, I wanted to mention I used to carry around a camera and shoot every show Michelle does. And I was usually just testing a camera.
Yeah.
So anyway, we had all this footage from Winters, and we've done a couple other live streams from different clubs, and we were putting this up, and all of a sudden, we got this notice on Facebook, as a lot of the jazz community got, that Scott had put up, or with the help of some other musicians, put up a fundraiser for Winters Jazz Club. Just to survive COVID, I think it was called. Anyway, so I'm looking through all this footage, you know, in Final Cut Pro, and I'm like, we can't put this up and put our stupid, you know, tip jar up. You know what I mean? Hey, this is, I shot this all in that room. So you're like, you know what, we need to, you know, right? And so that's part of it. So we're also going to tie that in and try to get a little more money to make sure all these places stay open. Because if they, you know, we're going to come back. I don't want to come back to empty rooms, right?
No, yeah, and that's part of the problem, right? I mean, Andy's, I know Andy's has a GoFundMe page going because, I mean, they're going to struggle to reopen. I know Dave Gemmelo up at the Green Mill just, you know, did his live concert outside, and he was selling some back, alcohol and things like that to go out of there. But I mean, you know, to be able to reopen.
Andy's, I think I was just booked on one coming up. I guess they're going to be no crowd doing. So they already did one. And they're going to do no crowd concerts in there where nobody's going to be in there and they're going to be broadcasting live streaming. So, and I'm on the one week from Monday, I think, with Jeannie Tanner, I think. Yeah. But anyway, that's what,
Well, it's going to be difficult. It's going to be difficult. I mean, talking to a lot of the different venue owners and stuff, I mean, this is a brand new way of operating and trying to find your way through. And unlike restaurants and bars, not that they're doing great by any means, but at least there's some sort of business model where they can sit outside and have drinks and food and come back in with especially a lot of these performance venues, such as especially Winters, but also Andy's. I mean, you know, when you get limited to a small amount of people and your whole business is live performance and packing them in, it's going to be really tough for everybody to try to maneuver around this whole thing, which is going to be going on for a while. So I'm glad they're figuring things out. But, you know, congratulations to you guys for actually putting a little tip jar out and helping Scott, because, I mean, you know, that's one of those things that I know he put that GoFundMe up to get things going. Plus, he had some health issues. So, you know, just a super guy. And we want him to come out of this whole situation as best as possible.
Yeah. As much as we're able to kind of connect to each other and help each other, I mean, we are the community there, so.
That's right. Yep. That's right. Yeah. All right, so outside of that, quick question. What else do you guys got coming up? Now, Darren and Michelle, you also have your drink and a wink, so we got to plug that. How are you going to get any sponsorships if you don't do that? Come on, let's go.
Yeah, right.
I'm going to hand it over to Darren.
Oh, okay. Well,
as this is the brainchild of Darren.
Okay. So in addition to drumming and writing charts, a few years ago, I came up with this thing for what was called Drinking a Wink. And really all it was I was getting a fascination with whiskey, and I was in the middle of some like really loud bar. I wasn't playing a jazz gig. I was playing some rock gig, and everybody's doing the, shots and I'm going crazy. And I sat back, you know, behind my drums. I just held the phone. I just did this thing where I went drunk, put it down, did a little wink, and just sent it out to the world. And, that has gone on and it kind of caught on. And I brought in a bunch of musicians on that one. So like Elaine Dame did one with me, Jake Vinsel, Corey Biggerstaff, Jeannie Tanner, blah, 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 Rose Colella, Alyssa and Jeff, Michelle. And then after a while I started, like, we were on gigs and I was talking to people, I was starting to give them like, you know, advice on whiskey and stuff. So I created a Facebook page. It's called Drink and Wink, and a Facebook group, I should say. And we went from, you know, me and then my fake Facebook account to now we're almost ready to get over 100 members. It's mostly Chicago musicians and kind of related to that. It's a lot of fun. And, you know, I've had some downtime, right? Like all of us. So it's been a little fun to get over there and have a second thing to do.
So. I love it, man. And you know, you do some reviews. So everybody who loves whiskey, they've got to check it out. They've got to head over drinkingawinkfacebook.com. Yeah.
That's there's no snobbiness over there. I don't know a whole lot. I'm just telling you, you know, maybe I can save you a few bucks of buying bad stuff and, you know, encourage you to buy some good stuff. So come on over.
I think a lot of people don't know what to buy. So you're actually an essential worker. That's the way.
The way I like to think about it. Yeah. And I try to keep it. I mean, again, people are sometimes like, you know, how do you have all that? Well, I had a little help with it, but you keep in mind, I'm a musician. I'm not an investment banker or I don't know what career is solvent right now. I'm none of those. I'm a musician. So I try to put those things out there that, you know, here's some things that are a certain price. Here's the good ones at that price. Here's the ones that you can stay away from. So I'm just helping out. So I'm essential.
You're an essential worker. You're just here to help. And that's all you can do. You can just help people.
Right.
One sip at a time and a wink.
Right.
All right. So, oh, Tracy Oliver just commented survival information. See, that's a good point. See,
one of our watchers.
Right, that's survival information. See, very good. Excellent. I like that. Mm-hmm. All right. So I'm going to let you guys go. We're going to link things up here so that everybody can go check it out. 7:30 tonight, Michelle Thomas Music on Facebook. It's going to be great live stream. The show that was at Winters last year, a lot of interviews, a lot of unexpected banter, I'm sure, will be ensuing over there. And, of course, all the tips and all the proceeds that they collect are going to go to help Scott over at Winters. And, you know, let's get everything back open and let's get everybody back up and running. And hopefully we'll be able to all see a live performance together in Chicago very soon.
Yeah. And Mike, I just want to thank you for what you're even doing right now, because you're keeping the music going, keeping the spotlight on the artists and the musicians, and making sure that we're not forgotten during this time, and giving people something to look forward to.
And wow. And yeah, it's just like the drinking a wing thing for me. The best thing about being a musician is obviously playing music. The second is the hang.
That's
the thing that we're all missing right now.
It's
so
really
this
true.
Feels like a hang.
Yeah.
It's great. You know?
Yeah, it feels like a hang, and I had technical difficulties at the beginning. It's almost like I tripped over a table, right? As I said.
Totally.
Perfect.
Right. Right.
All right. Well, congratulations to you guys, and always great to hang with you and see you guys, and I'm sure I'll talk to you guys soon. And have a good stream tonight.
Sounds good.
Thank you so much.
Mike. All right.
Take care. See you later.
All right.
All right, Michelle and Darren, you know, you've got to head over. You've got to check that out. That's going to be fun hang, as they said. And, you know, it's an incredible show. So you get a chance, head over to see that stream 7:30 tonight. We'll link that up right after this show ends. But right now we've got another guest. I'm gonna bring up Bill Chapin, and we're going to dial him up here on Skype, and hopefully everything works smoothly as it should, I hope. On our system here, because it's not running smoothly on Friday, but hopefully it's moving right there. And let me bring him up. And there's Bill. Hey, Bill, how are you?
Hey, Mike, I'm good. How are you today?
I'm doing good. I'm glad. Look at that, man. That was a smooth transition. We were able to do it. Looks like you can hear me, I can hear you, and I'm seeing you. So that's the entire battle on my end. So, man, I'm glad we could touch base today. I'm glad we could bring you on the show, because you and I first connected about the Grays Lake Summer Jazz Camp that you've been doing for quite a while, and we were helping to promote a little bit in the spring, and of course COVID-19 happened and kind of put all summer jazz camps and all educational things in general on hold, or at least online and on live stream. And then, you know, you and I emailed back and forth, and I thought it'd be great to bring you on because, you know, outside of the fact that you're an educator, you're also obviously a working musician and recording artist. And, you know, you do corporate events, you do corporate performances, you also do club gigs and live performances and festivals and everything else. So I thought I would bring you on. And the first question I'd love to pick your brain a little bit about is, how are you holding up during this wonderful COVID-19 situation, an unprecedented time in musical history?
Well, I'm doing fine, certainly. I can't complain. Personally, we lost our gigs, but I've been able to do some streaming and stay in touch with a few musicians through it. Certainly resonate with your battles with technology. It's been a steep learning curve, and I've been trying to combine a few things, but happily, the students and I have a number of students that are, you know, middle school, high school age, and they've been grateful to still be able to continue their lessons. And of course, this technology's allowed it. And then my adult students have enjoyed it too. Some of them have a little bit more time to work on stuff, and so that part's been good. It has been hard not seeing the musicians that I was working with every week, personally haven't had to depend on music for my whole, means of living, but I, you know, have great compassion for those who do. And of course I know some of those folks and wishing we could get back to it, especially for their benefit.
Oh yeah. I mean, and I just had Michelle and Darren on, and we were talking about their live stream that they had recorded at Winters Jazz Club last year. And they're restreaming it and all that stuff. You know, it's interesting you brought up the technology part of it, because I think, you know, for those of you that have watched this show that are watching right now, you're going to hear the same thing that I've been saying, but I'm curious to get your take, Bill, on the whole situation. Is that, you know, I think this big pause, one, if there's a silver lining to come out of it at all, I think it's causing a lot of the musicians that are used to running from gig to lesson and doing that, and then the next day happens and the next day happens and the next day happens and it keeps going. It's kind of made everybody stop and figure out technology a little bit and figure out a way to still make music, teach, generate some sort of revenue online. And I'm curious to get your take because, you know, as an educator, you're teaching all ages of musicians with private lessons. How's it been for you to connect with the student? Are you finding, like, you know, there might be some students that maybe you have a lesson with in person once a month instead of every week because it's just easier sometimes from a scheduling standpoint to do the Zoom thing. And then when you can actually get together, you guys get together. I mean, how's that working out?
Well, for me, the lesson structure and schedule has stayed pretty much the same. It was interesting the week that schools shut down and I knew that I couldn't have students in person. Jazz Education Network did a couple of webinars on teaching online. And I was amazed at, I ended my career in education as a technology director. And so I was in charge of technology for a school, but it's been about 10 years now. But I can see the progress of technology over those times and how ready many schools, not all schools, but how ready many schools and, you know, there are certainly places that, you know, homes that don't have technology, but to the degree that they do, we were ready to continue and jump right into it. You know,
yeah.
The only thing is, and they warned us about that in this Jazz Education Network webinar, you can't have the same expectations because you really can't hear tone and you can't hear things precisely. So I've had to change my expectations, and I've talked with other teachers that have had to do the same. It's a new ballgame. It's more frustrating. You can't do what you could before, but that was their advice at Jen, is lower your expectations a little bit, be patient. And with that attitude, I've really been enjoying working with students, even with the technological barriers.
I mean, you'll probably go back to in-person lessons when you possibly can, but I mean, that might be something where you might end up taking up some students that find you online through some of your other streams and some of your other things, and you'd be able to connect with them and build out an entire student base that's outside of the Chicago area that you probably would have never even thought to even think about before all of this happened.
Oh, definitely. Well, and this whole thing has made, I think you were referencing it earlier, it's made, I think, all of us do a steep learning curve on a bunch of technologies. teaching, of course, it's been, how do you manage the specific settings of, say, Zoom, yeah. And both on the student's perspective and on your own, and then starting, you know, I just thought, why not try a couple of live feeds? And then I'm into streaming software, and and then I'm into, not a great enough frame rate to keep my stream going and researching that. And I've been doing a lot more with Logic because in my live feeds, I've actually sent backing tracks to other musicians. They've recorded their piece and then I've pulled it back in, and then I play the backing and their performance live while I play the piano behind them. And so to get all of that done within, and then also an interview within a stream, obviously, you know, all about that, but,
yeah.
My son is a sound technician at the Goodman Theater. So he's been a great resource.
Oh man, that's the guy to know, huh?
Yeah, boy, he's been helpful.
Well, let's talk a little bit about your career too, because, you know, we should tell everybody to go over to BillChapin.com.
BillChapinJazz.com.
I've got it sitting right in front of me, and I didn't say it. So, yes, BillChapinJazz.com. And I send over. Everybody should go over there because then you can get the full update if you want to inquire about taking some lessons with Bill. I'm sure he'd love to talk to you about that. But also, when he does live streams and everything, you can get all the information and get updated on that. Talk a little bit about how you got interested in piano. Now you were doing technology for schools, so you were a technology person in schools, but you also did education. You were also in the music field too, right?
Well, I've kind of had a double life for a number of years. I was actually an English teacher first, and then moved into technology, and that's where I spent my career as an educator. But I had a wedding band for many years. Yep. With my wife sang in, and a couple of other guys that I met through the College of Lake County Jazz Band played in it, great players. And we had a working band for about 15 years. And then I got a chance to teach jazz piano out at the College of Lake County. And then eventually I let that go. I was busy with my tech job. And so I've been teaching privately ever since. And so I have always done music on the side until most recently. Now it's yeah, more full time. And I've really enjoyed in my post official education life, both teaching and playing, and had a great opportunity to play at, some area restaurants a lot, as well as the College of Lake County Band, which is a great jazz band, just with some really heavy players, a great directors that we've had over the years. So
yeah. Well, I know that band, and I know that college, and I know that there's some great players that come out of that. I think Chris White used to teach up there, if I'm not mistaken, like years ago. I think he used to teach when he first came back, when he first came to Chicago. I can remember him doing that when we were playing gigs, and he was astonished at the program that was set up there. So I mean, you know, it's really there's so many good programs and jazz education programs around the Chicagoland area that people, you know, aren't even aware of, because you only hear of a couple downtown Chicago here and there. But I mean, there really are. Talk a little bit about the difference between teaching music and teaching technology. I mean, that's it's different, but I gotta imagine there's a lot of similarities as well.
Yes, I certainly there's a great blend between teaching. I think teaching any subject, one of the differences, though, when you're teaching something like, especially if you're teaching jazz and improvisation, you know, there's a different approach. It's kind of how do you teach people to make things up? And I can connect it most to teaching speech. I did some introductory speech classes when I was an English teacher, and then you're helping students develop articulation to be able to have a topic and say something coherent about it. And, you know, creating a good jazz solo, I'd say, would be similar. You know, it's how do I get myself at the point where I'm fluent enough with the chords and the changes to, okay, now make something up and maybe even respond to the other band members while I do it. So, right. So that's the remaining challenge that I think will keep me fascinated the rest of my life, you know, is how to effectively teach improvisation, and as well as just the subject of jazz piano. So
that's one of the, that to me is one of the most difficult things. And I know a lot of people that are watching this love music, love jazz, love all different genres, and they hear people perform. And from my standpoint, I learned very technically at first on the drums and even playing marimba and all of that stuff. My biggest challenge was being able to actually feel comfortable, confident, loose, and stay in time when I was improvising, because it just wasn't taught in school. It wasn't taught to me. And as I came through, because especially with the way education goes, it's very simple, especially coming up, as you know, to sit there and go through, all right, go through page one, go through page two. Here's how you count. Here's your 16th notes. Count this way, count that way. All right, now, and then all of a sudden you do that for like 3 years, and you can read music and you do it. Okay, now play a solo. What? What are you talking about? So it's interesting.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I mean, how do you approach that when you get like a beginning student, even if they're like, you know, an older student? I mean, it's got to be something it's probably easier for younger students to be able to even conceptualize improvisation, because they don't have all these guardrails put up compared to like an older student.
Oh, I have great compassion for my adult students, because they come in already having accomplished so much in their life. And if you're going to learn something new, you have to be childlike. You know, mm-hmm. have to return to that place. So a lot of what I do with students is breaking things down. I mean, with piano, as with percussion, it's a multi-limbed operation. Yep. And multi-digits in the case of piano. So if you think about the, I talk to students a lot about how much RAM they have, you know, how much headspace is there in your brain. Yeah. To manage both of your hands, your left hand doing maybe a voicing, your right hand soloing, and then, oh yeah, I got to keep track of time too. So all yeah. of those components are out there. And you know, I think a lot about how my own skills have developed over time. And actually, right as I was retiring from Warren Township High School, where I spent my career, I went back and studied with Jim Trompeter. He just took me, you know, he just put me down to bass metal and started over with me. But he was just always talking about time and feel. And I mean, I'm still, you know, it's a work in progress, the whole thing always. But so I try to keep that in mind when I'm working with students. And, you know, it's interesting. Young people tend to have just a little bit more ability to just jump right in and make it happen. But we older people can still learn too.
Sure, sure. Well, I saw in your bio that you attended a Jamie Ebersole camp, and I went to the Ebersole camp when I was 20, when it was still at Elmhurst College, and I went there and I had gone through all of this stuff. I had started at Oakton Community College when I was in high school. I was with Jake Jerger and we played in Carnegie Hall. I've done all this stuff, and then I went to the Ebersole camp, and I'll never forget it, man. It's when I met Ed Sulf and I met Jeff. Dan Hurley and everybody, which I ended up studying with when I was at North Texas and all that. But I met all these guys, and Jamie Ebersole like stops the entire band one night when I'm trying to play. Cause I mean, I didn't know about improvisation, and he yells at me for playing four bass drums on the floor, and told me to take a solo. And I'm like, I don't even know how to do that, man. And he's like, all right, start over. And to your point, Ed broke me completely down and started bringing it back up. I had to relearn how to play conceptual wise because I could read, I could do all this, but I just had to relearn and kind of think differently about music in general. It sounds like that's what Trompeter did. He kind of just was like, all right, wait, let's start from beginning and reboot. And sometimes that's the best medicine for somebody to get to that next level.
Yeah. Well, and I knew I needed it. I'd spent a lot of years playing, you know, top 40 stuff, and always had the, my first training in jazz was from Alan Swain. I'm sure people know his name, yeah. You know, but I did that. And then I started having kids and got busy in my career. And so, there were a lot of years in between for bad habits to form. So he took care of that. And I actually, you mentioned the Ebersole thing. My first one, I went out to University of Northern Colorado because my brother-in-law lived out there and sister, and he's a jazz guitarist. And anyway, so I went out there, and I think it was Mantooth who was the piano guy that week. Yeah. And they stuck me in a lab with three other people who had no experience. And our first year, I wasn't in a combo even. I just had to learn voicings and get started. But yeah, it was a wonderful start.
Yeah. Yeah. And that camp, I mean, you know, when I look back, I only went to one, but it changed the entire way I thought about stuff. I quit taking lessons. I studied the stuff I got at the Ebersole camp for 8 months. Went down, auditioned at North Texas, and the rest is history. So, I mean, it really is one of those things that it's just like you never know when you're going to get inspired and hit and hear the right thing, and then boom, you're off to the races, you know. So with you, you were doing corporate gigs, you were doing the wedding band stuff and everything else. Now you're teaching, now you're, you know, retired from technology teaching. Now you're in music education and teaching private lessons, but you also run the Grays Lake Summer Jazz Camp when it's able to actually happen. Did you start that yourself, or did you combine with some other people to do that?
Well, I did start it myself, but very soon thereafter, I've had people join me. I had a student whose father really wanted him to have a group experience. He's a very talented young man, and so. I had always thought about this Ebersole model, and so I started it one summer, and he was in it, and it happened that my son was going to be a freshman that year, and he was in the combo, and I just ran across the photos recently of the first kids that were in the program and posted them on my Facebook page. But anyway, then the year after that, a guy named Paul Nielsen, who's a jazz and music educator in town here in Grays Lake, joined me. And he and I have done it forever since. And there were a couple years where I didn't do it and he kept it going. And then since I retired from my education job, we've built it up a little bit more, and now we have three other teachers with us. So there are five faculty members now. So
that's amazing, because I mean, you know, a lot of times they're connected to schools, but to be able to start this on kind of like a separate independent organization to do something like that, there's such a need for that in all the different areas. You know, obviously I know Midwest at Young Artists really well, and I remember when they first got started up there, and that whole thing, giving kids the opportunity to learn outside of the normal classroom of the normal school with like professionals like yourself. That's one of those things that summer jazz camps. I mean, you can get 8 months worth of information in like a week if you go to the right one, and then you've got to space them out. And there are not a lot of them around the Chicagoland area, especially in your area. I don't think there's any, right? So, I mean, I'm glad that you guys are filling that need and actually able to connect with students. What's the response been? I mean, you probably have waiting lists now for people to come to the camp, I would imagine, because once the word gets out that so-and-so can really play after they went to this camp that Bill's running, I'm sure you started getting inquiries.
Well, our first year we had one combo of 8 students, and then it grew to 2 or 3 combos a summer for many years. But I can't say we've had a waiting list, because we've just, you know, everybody, we actually run it once a week for 5 weeks plus some performances mm-hmm. opportunities. And so we've been able to schedule it so that one instructor can do 2 or 3 combos, usually 2. And so we've just been bringing more people on as the interest has grown. So we haven't had to turn anyone down yet. And we've had a great response. And of course, the unique thing about it, or the unique service that it's offering, is time to focus on improvisation. Because even not denigrating the efforts of schools and the band programs, but when you have a large band and even some combos, the amount of time to be able to do the experimenting you need to really learn how to become fluent as an improviser, it just isn't there, you know. It may be there, but summer don't hurt on top of it, that's for sure.
Well, it's you offer a more focused and concise way of learning that stuff. I mean, to try to learn improvisation and for a band director who's got 20 other people running around and having to worry about everything else, it's just a whole different ball game. And the students are really, when you get to be an improviser, as you know, like I'm telling you something, but I'm telling everybody else something, you know, you really need to free your mind up, and you need to be able to think and organize and just relax. To be able to teach properly in a like a high school or junior high environment, like hardcore improvisation over jazz tunes specifically, I mean, that it's just a tall order. So to have organizations like what you have and what some of these other schools have outside of the regular educational thing, I think that's why a lot of the students really excel, because you've got a lot of like-minded students that want to get better, and then they're in the right incubator and it takes off. So you must see a lot of students that come in at the beginning of the 5 weeks and then they leave and you're like, whoa, they really got something out of this.
Oh yeah, some of them really really become very fluent improvisers. And we've had a number of students who over there, some start in middle school and go through high school. And I actually do a jam session once a month too, and some of those students come to that. And we've actually continued that during the social distancing. We're not attempting to play at the same time, but we've been trading 12s, maybe a blues tune, or trading 4s. And there's a little bit of time in between, but at least we're getting together. But these people that come every month are just really just so comfortable. They know how to conduct themselves on the bandstand. And it's really just a joy to see.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome. And congratulations on that. I'm sorry it's on hold this year, but 2021, be back in business. And Bill, it's been a pleasure chatting with you, and we'll send everybody over to BillChapinJazz.com to find out the stream. When's the next live stream that you're going to be doing?
It's this Friday.
Okay.
Joe Odd is my guest artist. He's a fantastic tenor sax player. And we actually tried last week, and I actually got a new computer in the midst of this, and just everything conspired against me. And so I got to a tune and no one could hear me. So we're gonna reprise it this week.
All right. So what time?
Friday at noon. Friday noon mini concerts.
Ah,
just
okay.
A couple of tunes.
I love it. Noon on Friday. So check out BillChapinJazz.com to find out how to watch that and see that. And of course, connect with Bill if you're interested in taking some lessons virtually right now, potentially in person later. Bill, it's been a pleasure, man. Thanks for jumping on today. And I look forward to reconnecting with you live and in person sometime soon.
Thank you, Mike.
Take care.
Bye now.
All right. We had a full jam-packed show today. Michelle and Darren, Bill. I mean, great stories, great information. Hopefully we're connecting everybody here in the Chicago music scene, among other places around the world. I want to thank all of you for watching. Tomorrow, we've had a little bit of a conflict, so we're going to see. We might not have a show tomorrow. I'm waiting to find out how we're going to do that. I've got some scheduling conflicts on my end, so stay tuned. We'll be announcing that in the morning. And if we don't have a show tomorrow, we are definitely going to have a show on Thursday. So stand by for all of those announcements. This week has just been sort of in flux for my schedule, and I apologize. But hey, I thank everyone for watching. Of course, as I always say, if you like this show, please share it. Please like it. Please say hi. Let us know you're out there. Give us a heads up if we should be covering an event coming up soon. As I always say, if you like this show, please tell your friends, tell your neighbors, call the grandkids tomorrow, potentially. Well, actually, check in tomorrow to find out if we're doing a show tomorrow, because I've got a conflict that we're trying to work around. So we'll see what happens. Otherwise, I will see you back here at Thursday, 6 p.m. Central Standard Time. Stay safe. Stay healthy. We'll see you then.